This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wang Shaoning and Noel Lim. 7.06 in the morning, Monday the 20th of January. And in about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking about Malaysia's 5G rollout. But before that, let's take a look at how the markets did.
Well, in the US, the Dow closed up 0.2%. The S&P 500 also was up 0.4%. And the Nasdaq as well, up 0.3%.
Yeah, and all this was, as usual, new record highs for the US equity markets.
Of course it is.
And this is on the back of pretty good Chinese growth numbers. Anyway, closer to home in Asia, Asian markets on Friday were also in the green. Nikkei 225 was up 0.45%. Shanghai was marginally up less than 0.05%. Hang Seng up 0.6%. Kospi up 0.1%. Straits Times was also up by a similar quantum, while the FBM KLCI was up 0.5%.
So for more on markets this morning, we have with us Stephen Innes, Asia Pacific market strategist at AxiTrader. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Stephen. China's GDP numbers for 2019 came in at 6.1%, the lowest levels since 1990, affected by weak consumer spending, rising unemployment and trade tariffs. But is the worst over for China, or do you expect tougher times ahead?
Well, it's actually quite surprising when you think about it that we're just coming out of this trade war malaise, and the data is actually front running quite favorably. It's going back about a month or so where we started to notice significant pickups in the PMI data. Quite encouraging. Now, of course, there's still quite a lot of headwinds in the Chinese economy. You notice that the PBOC continues to add money to the system. We have to keep an eye on things. We have to keep an eye on issues beyond just the trade narrative, as there's some building momentum in the debt areas in China that's a little bit worrisome. But overall, things are going good. We're looking at China now trying to encourage investment inwards, and this is quite positive. So I feel fairly confident about China in the long game for sure. And even over the short term, things are a lot much better than anyone had expected. So, yeah, remain fairly constructive on the China outlook right now.
And bringing it to Malaysia, the ringgit has appreciated against the US dollar to 4.05. Is this trend sustainable, and are there domestic reasons to explain this inflow of funds?
You know, I think it is. You know, this. I think in my view, the Malaysian ringgit was going to be the big sleeper this year, simply because it was trading significantly undervalued to a lot of its regional peers. If we take improvements that should be knock-on improvements for the P1 deal, which is going to be on the export sectors, this is positive. We're getting stronger data in China, which is also positive given the close trade ties between Malaysia and China. And we're also looking at companies. Malaysia has been a really big benefit of keeping Chinese companies relocating into Malaysia. So this is pretty good for the health of the underlying economy. And this is really addressing the domestic issues. Also, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the upcoming march around the FTSE. Again, the bond, whether Malaysia will stay in the bond index or not, that's been out of the news. And I think that's quite positive. We think the Bank Negara Malaysia has managed to defuse the currency issues that the FTSE had. And things seem to be moving a lot more favorably. On the other side here, I think the threat of any intervention from the BNM to keep their ringgit trading somewhat a little bit weaker, whether overt or covert intervention, I think that's been quite nullified because the U.S. Treasury is really on the rampage about currency manipulation right now. So things look pretty good. You know, we got down in here to 405, perhaps a little bit quicker than most market participants said. I think the 2020 is going to be a good year for the ringgit.
And meanwhile, crude oil prices actually moved higher in the signing of Phase 1 trade deal. And also, of course, there was also the US, Canada, Mexico bills approved, passed by US Senate. Now, does this provide a backdrop of a bullish view of oil in the coming weeks as the threat of a global recession also recedes?
I think it's good. You know, it's great for sentiment, I think. But the issue right now that oil markets are dealing with is the projected faster non-OPEC supply that's coming to the markets. In other words, you know, the U.S. and all the other non-OPEC producers, that's a little bit fearful. But, you know, if you take this, the signing of the USMCA, and you take the signing of the P1, this is quite good for U.S. oil, that's for sure. Now, what we have to really see is the data to move higher. So far, we've seen a basing in the data in the two largest economies a year, the two largest economies that buy oil, U.S. and China. Now, that's not providing a significant re-rating for global demand right now, but it certainly could if the data continues to move upwards.
And Stephen, a bilateral trade agreement between India and the US is also expected to be drawn up in conjunction with Trump's upcoming trip. So do you expect trade concessions there, and will India's preferential trade status be restored?
You know, I think it's all about oil again. Obviously, we know India's unquenchable demand for oil, and I think they're going to increase their oil imports from the U.S. It really looks like the U.S. administration's pushing oil. They certainly pushed it down in China, the energy sector, as part of the P1 deal. We believe that'll be a big input into the India deal. So look for oil to be one of the headliners again.
Thank you very much, Stephen. And that was Stephen Innes, Asia-Pacific market strategist at Axie Trader, talking to us about several trade deals and the impact that they are likely to have on markets, as well as China's GDP and the ringgit. But also moving to some other international headlines this morning, ByteDance, which is the maker of TikTok, that's looking to take on Tencent Holdings in the lucrative mobile gaming arena, which Tencent has dominated for over a decade. So this is a Bloomberg story quoting sources saying that the world's most valuable startup has rapidly built a full-fledged gaming division in order to spearhead its venture into hardcore or non-casual games.
Yeah, so ByteDance is like this super social media platform from China, right? They're like a news aggregator, YouTube, Instagram, and now gaming all rolled into one. And why not gaming? Because in China, I think apparently 70% of consumer spending is on mobile in games. So it obviously makes sense for them to get into this and get a bite of that cherry. And really, I think this is really the company to look out for. And in particular, I think TikTok is also very popular in Malaysia. I think they've run like even auditions and you have many Malaysians who are participating in this. I think there was a 1 million audition last year.
Yeah, and the point about this is that for ByteDance, they're looking to the first two games released sometimes in Q2, targeting both local and overseas players. Now, ByteDance actually is often compared to Facebook because of its billion-plus users. And some say it's probably the most valuable app in the world. I think there was even talk that it would probably might look at a listing in the future. But over the few past years, ByteDance actually has made a few popular casual games. But those made money through ads. And now this is a move towards gaming, which requires, of course, higher investments and is probably a shift in terms of their strategy. So they're targeting more committed gamers. And I think the point is also for the company to diversify its sources of revenue, especially when the Chinese economy has shown signs of slowing. And also at the same time, TikTok has been drawing some scrutiny in the US. So they're also testing a new paid music app in Asia, basically just adding to their portfolio of products. And then, and most important at the end of the day, is trying to generate a steady stream of income, right? So not just the videos, but also gaming, which is what made Tencent the giant it is today.
But I think it's not as easy as it sounds for ByteDance to get into the gaming industry or renew its push into the gaming industry and take on Tencent, because the gaming industry, particularly in China, is very highly regulated. And this is also against a backdrop of the Chinese government being very worried about gaming addiction. They actually do have gaming rehabilitation centers in some parts of the country. So it's going to be a challenge for ByteDance to really expand in this arena. And of course, that's not even considering that they are going head-to-head with Tencent, and which has been entrenched for a number of years already.
Yes, and ByteDance have been apparently recruiting really heavily from some of these tech giants. I think not just China, but the US as well. But really, I think this shift to gaming is also about the 5G deployment, right? So with 5G, I think the gaming experience is going to be really different. It's going to take it to the next level. And I think even for myself, who is not a gamer, I might even actually get into gaming.
You might try it.
Yes.
Okay, I'm the person who doesn't have a single game on her phone at all, zero. But I know how much money there is involved in all this. And we just look at Tencent share price, right? That gives you an indication. It's extremely volatile, driven partially because whether the Chinese authorities give it any approval to launch new games. So every time there's no approval, you see the share price tumble. But if we just look at the first few days of the year, the stock has gone up from like 320 Hong Kong dollars to almost 400 Hong Kong dollars. So I think it will be interesting to see whether ByteDance really gives Tencent a run for its money.
Yeah, so because, and this is also remembering that Tencent has three of the most popular multiplayer mobile titles. So they have PUBG Mobile, Call of Duty Mobile, as well as Honor of Kings. And ByteDance is also facing some pressures in the US because it's battling US lawmakers' accusations that TikTok can be used to spy on Americans. So that's going to be very interesting to watch. But I mean, also speaking of giant Chinese tech firms, Ant Financial is working with banks to revive plans for an IPO. And this is more than a year after the company initially delayed the process on regulatory concerns over its profitability. Now, Ant is, of course, the sister company of Alibaba and offers everything from payments to consumer credit. In a 2018 funding round, which was when it was last valued, it was valued at $150 billion. So a listing, even of a small portion of its shares, would represent one of the biggest floats of an Asian company.
Yeah, so Alibaba owns 33% of Ant now. So looking at some financial information about Ant, it's limited, but in the quarter ending last September, the company contributed, I think, $309 million to Alibaba's income. And so Ant is considering a dual listing, maybe for its shares in Hong Kong and also in mainland China. And, you know, Alibaba itself raised quite a fair bit of money, $12.9 billion. So in Hong Kong, the secondary listing. So perhaps, I think, the market might see Ant as quite a favourable play.
Yeah, well, if we look at Alibaba share price, right, it's done phenomenally well from October last year to now. It's had a run-up from $160 to $227. Bear in mind, of course, this is the US listing. It has a listing, dual listing also in Hong Kong. A lot of optimism on this company. I think if you look at the earnings estimates, right, practically everyone has a buy on it. And yes, Bloomberg is working. So there are 60 buys, guys. 60 buys, two holds and no sells. So this is why I mean by it is such a love stock. P's only. You have only have to wait 29 years to get your money back. And consensus target price on Bloomberg is $240 versus the current share price of $227. This is really a proxy towards Chinese growth.
Indeed it is. And technology is also, of course, in the forefront very recently, even domestically, because of our Prime Minister's visit to Langkawi for the 5G rollout. And we're going to be talking about that next after these few messages. But if you haven't voted on the poll we have running on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, do head on over there and let us know what you think. We're asking you, what does the loss in the Kimanis by-election mean for Pakatan Harapan? Let us know what you think. We'll be taking a look at the results of that later at 7:45. But first, Malaysia's 5G rollout. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.